Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Arnie Lukes here at the Freedom Forum, and I'd like to welcome Eve Potvin from Canada. Welcome, Eve.
Yes, good afternoon, good morning.
That's it. What's it like over in Canada, Eve? What's the weather like?
It's nice weather this week. I mean, it's above zero. It went up to six today, and it went sunny in the afternoon there for a while. We were walking around. It felt like a little bit of springy, but I mean, it's going to last for about a week probably. I don't know what next week's going to be, but winter is going to come eventually. I know that, but with this climate change and everything else, it's bound to come. I'm really happy about the weather right now. Most people are kind of cheering up when you go shopping. They have a little bit of a step up in their, oh, nice day, and so.
That's interesting you say that, because I read, I think it was yesterday's paper, that England is preparing for a blizzard. And in Adelaide, and the blizzard, I don't know what that means in a sense of just how cold it gets, but either way, they're preparing for it. And in Adelaide, we're around a top temperature of 20 degrees today. Now, I'm finding it quite cold. 20
It's
degrees.
freezing.
I'm finding it quite cold because we've had the past really 2 weeks, apart from one day at around 40, we've had it up around the mid to high 20s, even as high as 30. And to me, the weather's delightful up there. I mean, I'm outside, the shirt's off, I'm in the sun getting a tan. Whereas I've got a jumper on. I've got a jumper on this morning because I've been outside with the sheep and the chooks and the bees, and it's fresh, a top of 20, so it's probably about 13 degrees, 14 degrees at the moment in Adelaide. So isn't that incredible, hey?
That's nice.
It is, of course it is. It's beautiful. The range and how we adapt, and even the rate of change of temperature, we're able to adapt reasonably smartly by putting on a jumper or taking a jumper off. And the fact is, we're doing a lot of, in our garden, we do a lot of mulching because the middle of the day sun can be quite harsh, and so the mulching protects the surface roots of the plants. And they are quite happy about it. I can see it the way they're growing, and they hold their shape even in the middle of the day. If the sun gets too strong, they can wilt. Well, in this case, there's sufficient moisture in the sufficient transpiration going on that they hold their shape, and so the plants are actually enjoying the warmer weather as well. Okay, so that's the world around us, at least as far as the temperature goes. The different temperature and how we can adapt to change. Global Governance versus Douglas Social Credit is the title of our of today's broadcast, and I want to actually take us through a little bit of history and our preparation for what actually goes on. Now, this video here, the Great Depression, part one, 1929, the Great Depression. I think it's very important that we consider that the financial system withdrew finance. It called in the loans, the central banks called in the loans, and they refused to offer new loans. And so that brought about the Great Depression. That's what actually happened. And the charts, the information, the investigations into why it occurred substantiate that that was a man-made phenomena, a man-made phenomena. Now, the next issue I wanted to bring up was these videos here under the Dust Bowl, the Central American plains, and how man's engagement with the natural world was heading in the wrong direction. They didn't actually develop a response to losing the fertility of the soil. They hadn't thought it through. They were simply mining the soil. They were simply exploiting it for fast gains. In the 20s, the roaring 20s, and then of course when the drought came and the wind came, it blew the topsoil away. So that was the Dust Bowl, the Prairie Dust Bowls in the 1930s. Now, I wanted to just touch on this New Australia project. I just wanted to lay the groundwork. A group of Australians, under the leadership of a bloke called William Lane, decided to go to South America. And to they were given land to set up a socialist paradise in Paraguay. It says here in Paraguay, in South America. And they went there And to set it up, now, in order for them to accept the people who were going, the people were meant to give up all their worldly goods and accept that they were not allowed ownership and it had to belong to the state. And the thing is that this particular experiment, New Australia, the socialist utopia, it didn't last 2 years. It completely collapsed. Even though it had funds, it had fertile soil, it had fertile land, and it had willing people. It had willing people. Okay, the people were willing, the land was fertile, it was there, they had every opportunity to bring about the socialist utopia that they dreamed about, the theoretical utopia. But when they put socialism into practice, when they put totalitarianism into practice, because this bloke in charge insisted that he was absolute leader, and they agreed that he was absolute leader until such time as the second convoy arrived. And but the fact is that it just disintegrated, it formed different groups, and in the end, it collapsed. It collapsed. So they attempted to implement totalitarianism, but it was under the label of socialism, but essentially centralized control. And the fact is that when we have centralized control of the assets, of industry, of the mechanisms of state, every example that we've seen, every example of what we've seen in the last 100 years has failed. You think about all the Soviet paradises that are there, the Chinese socialist paradises that are there. They fail because they fail to actually respond to the desire inherent within every individual to be free, to be creative, and to find expression in what they do. And this to me is so very, very important. Last week we mentioned, I think it's Lord Acton, absolute power corrupts absolutely. All men, all great men are generally evil men or bad men. Now those things are very, very important. They're a reflection of the nature, the natural man in an environment. He won't change his nature. He is a man and this is what he does. And I would describe that as natural law. So when you talk about global governance, you're insisting that man has got to be so superior to his very nature that he can actually overcome his nature. And I don't believe that that's real. Global governance or totalitarianism, I don't believe it's real. It becomes a dictatorship and it becomes a slave state. Your thoughts, Eve?
Yeah, good words there. The totalitarian, socialism, communism, Marxism, these words make me sick. Like they're, when I think of, I get pictures in my head that what it represents, you know, when you think about Hitler and the dirty 30s and people with no money. I mean, it's a terrible thing that we have to go through this. And it's not because because the goods are not there. There's all kinds of goods, there's all kinds of wealth, natural wealth. There's products that are all over the stores. The stores are full. You know, there is products everywhere that people do not have access to. Unless they get into debt, of course. That's the system we live under, and that's a system we have to change. God put everything on earth for us, and the money system is a man-made system. It's made by man, and if you want to overpower your neighbor, you use it as a dominating tool. But if you follow God's law, very simply, God's law, you will achieve a happiness in the society because you're satisfying God's laws. God's laws is to protect all of us. And they have sinned in that sense. The money system, the bankers and all the elites and everything else, they will have a lot of answering to do when it's time to be judged. I'd hate to be in their spot. So some of them better change their ways because the poor people that are dying all over the place. I was watching the news last week in London, Ontario, on the news, and they were showing a mother with a child, a couple of kids I think she had, and she was like almost crying on the in the interview. Like a journalist was there interviewing her. Yeah, well, I've got enough money. I have to think about my rent. And but I have my kids to feed. I don't have enough money to do all these things, to get all these things. So we've got to make the people understand that it's a artificial problem. It's not a problem that cannot be fixed. The products are all over the place, but there's no money to buy it. Money is what we need. We need money to represent the wealth so we can exchange product everywhere. I mean, it's a simple thing, but we're so brainwashed as a society. Oh, you gotta have money, you know, and this and that. I mean, we've got to really think about our future. This is something else. We're gonna have to really do some deep thinking and tell the people that they've got to learn the natural laws. I mean, and the reason why it's not working, because people are not listening. They're not obeying the laws of God. That's my opinion.
Yeah, no, thank you for that, Eve. I think it's very important. I see you're referring to the laws of God, and I think that needs a little bit of, if you like, explanation. To me, when we look at the Dust Bowl in the 30s of the American plains, that to me is essentially defying or going against the law of return. And the soil needs to have a law of return. It's not something to be mined and exploited. It's something to be nurtured and looked after. And the fact is that the farmers of the day financially were encouraged to mine the soil and exploit it, and it's like a never never. Let's get the money, let's get out of here. And it's a very short-sighted view. And then of course when the drought comes, there's no substance in the soil, there's nothing that they can sort of hold the soil together with, because all the overgrowth is gone and it's just a dust bowl, and the winds come and it just picks up the topsoil and takes it away. And so they have to start again. Now, this is not unprecedented. There are a lot of historical markers that show desertification, I think is the word, man-made, turning fertile land into deserts done by men through their abuse of the soil. And the thing is, when it comes down to it, a good farmer is also a husband to the soil. He's a steward of the soil. He knows each paddock. He knows the vagaries, the requirements of each area of every paddock. He knows it intimately. And it's something that, given the opportunity, he would be a good steward over. But the fact is, the financial system insists that he return. He's forever chasing the treadmill of debt. And I brought up an article just yesterday of where women in industry are trying to juggle home and work because of the pressure of debt, and how as little as 40% are at all satisfied with what they're doing. It is not the utopia that's presented, and that's to me why it's important. The real world had a time of plenty, but the financial world imposed the depression. The real world was that we should be good husbands and stewards of the soil, but the financial system encouraged or insisted that farmers exploit it and mine the soil and weaken its structure, and of course remove the humus through chemical fertilizers and stop the microbes and all the mycorrhizal fungi and all the bacteria and insect life that a healthy soil should be teeming with. And that was just exploited, mined, and turned into a sand bowl. And of course, with the drought and the wind, it just blew away. The financial system pushes people into that corner. The financial system is, if you like, a man-made system. And when we talk about global governance, it's actually the financial system that is the most powerful weapon that global governance has. And if you only look in a sense as man as an economic unit, then you miss the bigger picture. The bigger picture being that we have an ecological relationship with every part of the world. The soil is part of it. The climate is part of it. We shouldn't be polluters. We should be good husbands of industry. We should be producing quality products that last a lifetime. But the financial system forces people to do other, because it's always the financial considerations are first and foremost. And the fact is, finance is an abstract system. It separates man from the real world. If you like, the thinking about finance is that there's more value in finance than there is in the real world. But it's actually the real world that we need. It's the real world that gives us the air that we breathe, the water that we drink. It gives us the food that we need to eat. The real world, not the abstract world. So it's the real world that we need to actually engage with and take into account in our thinking. The real world in context, not an abstract, not an abstract system. Essentially, it's like being mesmerized by a witch doctor that there are demons out there, and if we don't respond to these demons, we can't actually enjoy the fruit that's there, the time of plenty. And if ever there was a time of plenty with the four industrial revolutions, we touched on them, men working together, the division of labor, introduction of steam, introduction of electricity, introduction of automation, advanced control, robotics, four industrial revolutions, four distinct multiplication factors in the productive system. Man does not have to work in order to have sufficient provision for all mankind. What we have to do is respond in a fair and equitable manner to the cultural inheritance that belongs to everyone. This is Douglas Social Credit, and that's what it advocates. Eve.
Yeah, we talk about global governance, and I watch a lot of videos. And one of the videos I was watching is in the Agenda 2030. So we're only 10 years in their plans, the elite's plan. And they say in one of the speakers that was in there, says, what we're planning, he says, we're not going to let men pollute the earth anymore. We're not going to let, so we have a plan on how to make them pay for if they pollute, they're going to pay a tax, or they're going to pay a fine. So we're going to, so they have our agenda really prepared for us, and it's not going to be long before we completely lose our freedom is going to be completely taken away. And, but that's because of the money system. The money system is not in gear or in the same level as what the products are. The products have been built all over the place, like we mentioned before. And if only a dividend could be sent to every citizen to close the gap that's missing, we have a good chance of making it. Then the banks won't be as powerful, maybe, and we're going to be able to live a fair life, because I think they set men up for failure. That's basically what they've done. They've set men up for failure. And if you don't make it at all, sometimes you end up in jail. Wow. We've got a few jails in Ontario. I was by one today where my mobile home is, and it's a jail. People have committed all kinds of crimes and everything else. And they've stolen, they've killed, they fought, they stole. But you know what? The real culprit is still at large. That's what we have in one of our articles. The real thief is still at large, still doing his little work of making men end up with a failure. Family failure, all kinds of different failures in their lives. And I mean, they have a way of doing things, but you know what? It's not a very smart way. It's not sustainable. And exactly that's what they want us. They want to make it more sustainable by 2030, if it's they're doing it the way they're doing it now, I'm sorry, but the sustainability is not going to be there.
Yeah,
they're gonna have a revolution in their hand or something like that.
Yeah, and I think that's actually part of the plan, Eve. Unfortunately, what's going on south of your border, the level of homelessness, the fact that even on the eastern side of America, northeastern corners of America, Chicago, Detroit, all those sort of areas were manufacturing hubs for automotive and industry, all the ancillary industry that goes with those major industries. And of course, you shut it down and you've got destitution. Now, those are financial policies. These are actually the outworking of financial policies. Those workers could have easily turned their hand into building ablution blocks or temporary permanent accommodation for the homeless. They could have been doing plenty, but the fact is the financial system won't allow it. It won't release the credits. And this, to me, is an abomination. It's an absolute abomination. Those homeless have done nothing wrong. There's a willingness there, there's a desire there, but they're destitute because of the system. And this is a man-created system. In the 30s, the Depression, it was the man-created system withdrawing of credit. Calling foreclosing on the loans, right? They forced the Depression. The central banks, forced the Depression as policy in order to maintain sufficient power, and then justification being the, if you like, the Second World War, the expansion of communism to half of Europe. I mean, that was the end result of it. Don't say that they didn't achieve their purpose. They did. And to me, this is most important, that you start looking at the purpose or the design behind these things. So we've got to choose a better way. And it starts with each person. It starts with making a deliberate choice that, okay, there's something that I can do about this. The first thing I've got to do is educate myself. I've got to actually look at what's going on and learn by history, look back in history, and don't take for granted what's being presented in the mainstream media, but have a serious look at these things. We've got a wealth of information. I'm just going to cut across here to our website. This is the main website, Australian League of Rights. But you go to our library, and in the library here, it's got hundreds and hundreds of PDF documents, quite hard to find books, and you can download them and read them. Read them on your iPad, read them on your ebook, whatever it is that you've got. And in these hundreds and hundreds of books, what it's about is it's about explaining to you the history of what we've gone through, certainly the last 100 years, and how finance has played a critical role in deconstructing civilization. America, the strongest, most productive nation in the world, in the history of the world, the strongest, most productive nation in the history of the world, is on its knees financially. Industrially, it's been deconstructed. The only thing they're producing is weapons, is military industrial. That's all they've got left. 50% of their economy is based on military industrial. And that, to me, is such a sad indictment. When if that 50% was converted to supporting the homeless, if it was converted to those in need, if it was converted to restore vitality and life forces to the soil, it would guarantee their sustainability. It would guarantee it. Because in the soil are the life forces that actually make for a vital and healthy people. You need healthy soil to have healthy food, to have healthy people. It's not It's not rocket science. Your thoughts, Eve?
I'm just thinking of these students. Okay, now we're in a fair time. The universities are going, the colleges are full. A lot of them have finished and they've gone into the job market. A lot of them didn't find jobs in what they were studying in. Some did, very few. But a lot of them, they've gone to work for companies, different manufacturing, restaurants, wherever they can make a living. And not only make a living, but pay those bankers back with the money that they lend them. And now the students are in the university. Now I can see 3, 4, 5, 6 years from now, they're all going to come out on the job market. There's going to be nothing for them. And so the companies are going to close. That's what I can imagine. The companies are going to close, and then the banks are going to be back in their old ways again. I'm going to call the loans back, and it's going to bring less money. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, do we not learn anything after two world wars, and there's wars here and there now to get those industrial war weapons put into the market and so on and so forth. I had heard a story somewhere that the president of the United States is part of U.S. arms. And 1 year, I remember about 10, 15 years ago, they had to report on the amount of money they had made on the, so very successful business. Oh, so we've made good progress. The profit is amazing. We've never had so much profit. So keep investing in the weapons and so on and so forth. We're going to do well in the next few years. So they're talking about producing something that kills. A gun is only good for one thing. It's to kill.
That's right.
It's not good for anything else. It's not for, it can defend yourself, but you eventually probably will have to kill somebody because he's going to break in. So I don't see anything with these poor students are going to come out. It's going to hurt the market. And I can see between now and 2030, a lot of chaos is going to be produced. A lot of problems are going to occur. They're going to sprout all over the place. And I mean, there's going to be little revolutions everywhere. We can see it now in Europe and in China. They're having marches of people who are getting killed with water, like just spraying water on the people, and they get killed by the jet. I mean, it's terrible. And I can imagine God is letting this happen because we don't want him. We don't want him around. So he says, well, you want this. I didn't, you know, I would like to help you, but you don't, you're not a guy, you're not asking for help. So I'm going to let things happen, and whatever happens, and they're talking about, saw a prediction, their volcanoes are ready to erupt all over the world, but they just don't know when they're going to erupt. So I just heard that either a prophecy or a prediction by somebody, they're going to have problems with even just the volcanoes and the earthquakes and all that, which we've seen a lot in the last few years. So when that happens, a lot of things are going to be destroyed. The fires here, fires there, storms, weather. I mean, all this is going to amount to something. And we're going to be asking for the elite, help, please help. We're dying. We're starving. Please help us. I'm not going to do that. I hope I'm not going to do that, because I pray to God that I'll never ask an elite to help me. I'd rather help somebody and they maybe die in the process, but we're going to have to educate the people whether we want or not. We have to go out and tell the people they have to get up and they have to understand what's going on, what's going on in the near future. These students, maybe I don't have any way to talk to them, Ernest, but you know what? I could go in there and scream. I could say something. They might arrest me. I don't care. But they might say, well, what's the problem? You know, well, your future is at stake. This is what it's all about. You're going to owe $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $100,000 by the time you get out of university. You're not going to have a job. You can't start your own business because the banks are not going to give you credit. I mean, they've got to understand that. They've got to understand some of it. And I've talked to some of them. I went to a shopping mall the other day, and the people were coming in and out, and I was going, you know, leaflet here. Do you know we have to change the financial system? Thank you, thank you. No, I'm all right. I'm good. And then, but every once in a while, one person would come out and say, "What's this all about? The finances? I thought you were a religion or something." I said, "Well, I'm Catholic, but I said, that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to tell you about the financial system." So I'm waking up some people, maybe, and we've got to do more of that. That's the thing. We've got to involve more people. And Sunday is our meeting. I'm going to have to make phone calls to invite the people and tell them to do the same thing. Wow. We're going to have to, I'm going to have to get mad.
Good on you, Eve. Good on you. Yeah, no, that's an interesting point of view. A bit of end times, if you like, end times prediction there about volcanoes and earthquakes and things like that. But the fact is, I think to me the key is that what the dust bowls of the 1930s showed was that when you go against the natural world, when you defy what is the natural order, you actually know, I'm just going to exploit this for an abstract thing, the abstract being finance, the abstract being, it's not real, but you're convinced that you've got to go after it. When you place the surreal, the abstract, over the real world, you impose a discipline that actually destroys your very environment that you live in. Profit at all cost. I mean, to me the end of this type of thinking is something like nuclear energy, or worse still, nuclear explosion. Because what it is it's such a short-sighted, selfish attitude. Short-sighted, selfish attitude to have something like that at your disposal for your own benefit. Central planning, I mean, this to me, global governance, it's a reflection of the fallibility of man. Man is not infallible. He's not perfect. He will yield to his weaknesses, whatever weaknesses they are. He will yield to them. And don't tell me you don't have weaknesses. Every man has weaknesses. Every man. And he has to do his darndest not to yield to it. So when we look at the Depression, that was bankers yielding to the weakness of this temptation of power. The temptation of power. Bankers yielded to it. The Dust Bowl, the farmers under financial pressure yielded to this temptation to exploit their soil. The last thing they wanted to do, but they did it for financial reasons. And then you look at, say, the utopian belief in a new Australia, which I said, they went to Paraguay and tried to establish it. These are, if you like, abstract narratives being imposed on the natural world. The way to actually process what's going on is to put yourself back in contact, in context with the real world. The real world is one of abundance. I've got, we caught a couple of swarms last weekend, bee swarms. See if we keep them, see if they turn out any good or no. But one of them looks like it's quite strong and the other one's marginal. But that's the natural world. You've got to nurture the natural world. You've got to respond to it. You've got to take into account the needs of it. The soil is no different. The environment is no different. You know, you look at behind us, the image behind us, a beautiful blue sky, fluffy white clouds. It's, to me, it's lovely. The autumn colours. These are the things that you relate to and that you bind yourself with or associate with. It's one of, if you like, husbandry. It's one of engagement. It's one of ecology, man's relationship with all the disciplines, not just finance. Finance is a counting system, and that's all it is. No different than weights and measures. No different. Finance is, but it's what it's become through mystical, if you like, extraction, is it's become more real than the real world. And this is what we have to deconstruct. The university students with their indebtedness. Why should they be indebted? They've actually, the education task has been completed. The debt, the physical debt of the tutor, the school, the housing, the information, the books, has already been paid. The physical debt was paid when the students completed their courses. The real world, there is no such thing as debt. But there is exploitation. And this is something that we've got to identify. The financial system is cunning and it's shrewd, and it exploits an abstract for this thing called power. And these men are not yielding to it. They're actually being controlled by this desire. I think it was very well depicted in that trilogy, Lord of the Rings, with Gollum. Gollum, this precious thing, the Ring of Power. And he was completely consumed. And in the end, he went into Mordor and fell into the fires. And that, to me, is the narrative that we've got to consider. We've got to place ourselves in the real world and look at it and take into account what is actually going on. Eve, it's 35 minutes into it. Have you got any closing comments?
I want to see all kinds of stuff, but I'm going to shut up. I'm just thinking about the students. They're, you know, they have that problem. Okay, that's coming. But you know what? The bankers took advantage of it. They saw something there. And, hey, we can, you know, there's something we can grab. You know, we can take a hold. You can't declare bankruptcy on a student loan. Plus, the bankers have done this not only to students. They've done this to all kinds of different countries in the world. They look at their wealth. They say, look at this. They got diamonds over here. Look at it. They have water over here. And they have a beautiful river here. It's all nice, clear water. Let's buy these things and take it. You know, we'll take it to our advantage. It belongs to the people, but now they don't have access to it anymore.
Yeah.
So it's a rotten system that has to be denounced all over the world, and it has to be given a solution to counter this when it's time. We can't do it overnight, but we can teach from day to day and make sure that people know there is hope. There is a solution. And when the time comes, maybe some people will get together and says, we can do this. We don't need the banker. And as a group, it's going to be a lot harder to fight a group than it is to fight one person, like a president that would like to print his own money or something like that. He won't be able to print his own money. They'll shoot him. So, I mean, it's only a question of maybe talk to people, try to make them understand this is what's happening. We've got to really get our pride and subdue it, you know, like just help your neighbor.
Yeah.
And practice charity. Nothing wrong with charity.
I read a book, and I've got it right here. And it's called On Planning the Earth. You can't see it. I'll put it in front of me. You can't see it because it's green. But anyway, On Planning the Earth, Jeffrey Dobbs. It's on our website. On Planning the Earth and the Local World.
And Jeffrey Dobbs?
Jeffrey Dobbs, yeah. Yeah, Jeffrey
oh,
Dobbs.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. I've read him, yeah.
In the middle of our library, in the middle at the top, Jeffrey Dobbs. And he said, and don't be afraid to use the word, love your neighbor. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. It's a natural law. If you can love your neighbor as you love yourself, and that doesn't mean impoverish him. It means allow him to be free, foster his freedom so that he can find expression and be creative. And in his freedom, he can give thanks to this same God that you give thanks to. Because that's the...
You are a constitution.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, beautiful.
The constitution belongs to us, the people. It's there to protect us. So it's the same thing.
That's right.
Love your neighbor. Yes.
Love your neighbor. Excellent seminar. Forum today, Eve, thank you for it. Interesting, a bit of eschatology there, end times theology. But the fact is that if we defy the natural world, if we defy the world that God has given us, then we'll harvest the benefits. And unfortunately, that's what the Depression did. That's what the Dust Bowl did. That's what student debt is doing. That's what the indebtedness of the whole world is doing. It's because we're defying natural law when God, is a God of abundance. Cheers, ladies and gentlemen. Arnie Luke's Eve Podfay from Canada. Thank you, Eve.